Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm your host, Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, and on kwtf.net out of Santa Rosa, California. The show is sponsored in part by the worker owners at Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Karma Street in downtown Asheville, North Carolina. Firestorm features organic coffee and milks, vegan sandwiches, homemade baked goods, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found online at www.firestormcafe.com. For many anarchists, the history of anti-authoritarian and anti-capitalist resistance in Spain serves as a laboratory in which to discuss the successes and failures of that political trajectory in application. The communes, the vibrant differences and debates that existed, and the resistance to the rise of fascism, bourgeois social democracy, and statist communism. These are the elements that find echoes in struggles prior, such as the Russian and Mexican revolutions, and since in the struggles of the 1960s through today. This week's speakers, Ana and Pablo, present a slightly different narrative. These two comrades from Spain, from Barcelona in particular, cover a critical, if brief, history of anarchism, of the anarchism existent from the beginning of the social revolution, ongoing when Franco's military coup of 1936 was engaged, through the era of dictatorship, and on to the spectacular democratization of Spain in the 1970s and into today. The speakers propose that the strongest that anarchist movements have been during the periods of critical heterodoxy and debate within, as well as mutual aid and support in the face of resistance. This show, due to its length, is split into two episodes. Other topics discussed during this presentation include the rise and prominence, or lack thereof, of anarcho-feminism in Spain, as well as debates around healthcare and engagement in reformist struggles, along with folks' neighbors. So I hope you enjoy. We're speaking with two comrades from Barcelona to discuss the history of anarchist struggles in Spain since the 1930s. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, recently, the anarchist struggle and social movements in Barcelona have gotten international attention with the Plaza Occupation movement, with the general strikes. And of course, there was also an important social revolution centered in Barcelona, in Catalonia, during the Spanish Civil War back in 1936, which was also a major historical episode on a world scale. When we look back at the anarchist movement in the Spanish state, and particularly in Barcelona, what we find is that the movement seems to be a lot stronger when the broad anarchist space is fragmented between multiple different currents, all of which are strongly identified and maybe often in conflict with one another, not in agreement, as long as those different currents are communicating, whether that's criticizing one another, supporting one another, creating a spirit of solidarity. And what we found is that the anarchist space is strongest when it's fragmented and communicative, rather than when it's unified under one single organization, or when it's segmented into disparate groups that don't communicate at all. So, for example, the Civil War broke out in July 1936, and that immediately triggered a social revolution with the occupation of factories and the collectivization of land. And that, of course, had a lot of preparation that went into it. A lot of a struggle in the previous years, a lot of capacities that were built, and that was done by a wide variety of actors. Of course, there was the Anarchist Labor Union, the CNT, but that had insurrectionary elements. Also, there were very strong illegalist and individualist tendencies in the Spanish state. There were naturalist anarchists that practiced vegetarianism and nudism, as well as target practice. There was the anarcho-feminist group that formed in advance, Mujeres Libres, or Free Women, that played a very important role. There were all sorts of currents, not just the anarcho-syndicalists, who were preparing, both in terms of spreading visions of how to self-organize society, how to take over the workshops and factories, how to collectivize the land, and as well as practicing armed struggle, seizing weapons, learning how to use them, fighting back against the state, and all of those factors played a very important role. But as the strength of the anarchist movement grew, the anarchist base unified and stood entirely behind the CNT by the time that the Civil War broke out in 1936, so that when you had the sort of informal leadership of the CNT make a very flawed decision to collaborate with the Republican government and to collaborate with the communists against the fascists, which allowed the communists to essentially stamp out the anarchist movement and also sell out the struggle against the fascists, then rather than just one single anarchist current suffering the consequences of that bad strategic decision, the entire anarchist movement suffered those consequences, because at this point the anarchist movement was very unified. And that was all especially unfortunate, because just in the prior years they had many many examples, many lessons that could have taught them that this was a flawed idea. And in fact, other anarchists at the time were criticizing this decision, but they were definitely a minority, because the movement as a whole was sort of unified within this structure of the CNT. So, for example, in 1933 and in 1944, you had insurrections in different parts of Spain that were brutally crushed by the Republican government. So not by a military dictatorship, but by the very government with which the anarchists would ally just 2 short years later. And you also had the experience that was well known in Spain of what the Bolsheviks did to the Russian Revolution. And they knew very well that the Bolsheviks in Russia had arrested and killed off fellow anarchists and steered the revolution in a very authoritarian and ultimately a capitalistic direction. So they had plenty of reason not to make that strategic decision, but one anarchist current made the decision and the rest sort of followed them to their graves. So, of course, the Civil War was lost, the fascists won, and the experiment of an anarchist revolution was prematurely snuffed out. But after the Civil War, the anarchist struggle continued. The Maquis were anti-fascist guerrillas, mostly anarchists, who operated after the Civil War in Catalonia, as well as other parts of the Spanish state. They didn't accept defeat in the Civil War, and so they headed to the hills to continue fighting against the Franco regime. They lived in France and in Catalonia. They carried out bank robberies and also robberies against businesses in order to finance the struggle, helped and supported the prisoners. They smuggled weapons and propaganda across the border with France, and they distributed those throughout Catalonia. They carried out sabotage. They killed snitches. And on several occasions, they tried to assassinate Franco. In 1949, fascist Spain managed to normalize their international relations, so they were able to begin a much stronger repression against the Maquis. The Maquis, the anarchist guerrillas, had the hope that once the fascists and the Nazis lost the Second World War, other countries would help Spain get rid of the Franco regime. To the contrary, the other countries, such as the U.S., the United Kingdom, supported fascism and turned their back on the anti-fascist struggle. In the following years, there was a very heavy repression, and the police got orders to shoot any suspicious person. 80% of the Maquis were liquidated. Meanwhile, the Maquis had big problems with funding and with getting support from the CNT in exile in France. Once fascist Spain is accepted by Europe, the CNT orders the Maquis to abandon the anti-fascist struggle. But the Maquis refused, and so they lost the support of the CNT. So they found themselves in a situation of struggle without without resources, without funding, and with the police hot on their heels. Finally, in 1963, the last Maqui in Catalonia was killed. The conclusion that we can draw from this is that the CNT was living more on their image and on the basis of functioning bureaucracy than on the basis of its participation in the struggle.
Luchemos hermanos contra los tiranos y los regentes, rojo pendón, negro color.
So the Confederación Nacional de Trabajadores was a workers' union that took a syndicalist, or I guess that's a weird word to use, but like an anarcho-syndicalist sort of model, but was not inherently an anarchist organization. Is that correct?
That's correct. The CNT definitely organized itself as a labor union with heavy anarchist influence and on a definitely anarcho-syndicalist model, but it was a union for workers, and workers didn't have to be anarchist in order to participate. It was not meant to be an ideological organization. Subsequently, in the 20s, you had a syndicalist, reformist branch really grow within the CNT, a branch that wanted to turn it into a reformist organization and to impose itself as a leadership on that organization. So at that point, you had lots of anarchists in the rank and file of the CNT kick out that would-be leadership, who subsequently left the CNT and formed a political party. Many anarchists did belong to the CNT. A huge number of anarchists belong to the CNT. Lots of the Maquis, the anarchy guerrillas, also belong to the CNT. For example, Kiko Sabaté, who was the most famous of the anarchist guerrillas. He always considered himself a member of the CNT. Even when the CNT stopped supporting the Maquis. And he kept trying to maintain that link with the CNT.
What types of relationships existed between the CNT and the FIL, the youth organization?
The FIJL, which is the Libertarian Youth Organization, was the youth wing of the CNT. And many Maquis belong to the Libertarian Youth and to the CNT simultaneously. The Maquis, for example, had a publication called Ruta, and they signed their articles as Libertarian Youth.
What was the relationship between the FI and the CNT or the Maquis?
The FI started out as a rank-and-file attempt by anarchists within the CNT to defeat the tendency towards reformism in this new sort of self-appointed CNT leadership. So that began as a revolutionary current within the CNT to keep the CNT from being co-opted. However, once the FI succeeded in this attempt, they won lots of influence within the organization, and subsequently the FI became wedded in a strange sort of way to the CNT, so that by the time the CNT went into exile, the FI and the CNT were considered sort of one and the same. And at that point, the FI had already transformed into a conservative organization that cared more about the organizational well-being of the CNT rather than the struggle, even though they, in their beginnings, they were quite different. So in the 70s, you had the transition to democracy. The fascist dictatorship decided it would also be in its own best interests to transition to a democracy. There was a pressure from investors, a pressure from the business class, and also a desire within within the European Union to have Spain democratized so it could join the European Union. And that was a very stage managed transition. So, for example, Franco, the fascist dictator, brought back a king so that Spain could be a constitutional monarchy. The communists were legalized and they formed the Socialist Party. The fascists just became the Conservative Party, and then they continued to try to suppress that history of revolution. And of course, repression continued against the anarchists. Notwithstanding, it was a moment of very strong struggles. Lots of people, hundreds of thousands of people, came out into the streets again. Many people thought it would be another chance for a revolution. And the CNT came back from exile in France. They came back to Spain. And in Barcelona, some of the early CNT protest gatherings drew crowds of hundreds of thousands. They were some of the largest gatherings in those days. And lots of people flocked to the banner of the CNT because the CNT still had... it was still a symbol of resistance, of uncompromising resistance against fascism, unlike the communists and the socialists who were starting to collaborate with the new regime. But unfortunately, the CNT had completely lost touch with the reality in Catalonia, in the Spanish state, in the intervening decades, whereas the Maquis had always tried to cultivate relationships and contacts and resistance at the grassroots, at the base. The CNT had really lost contact. So in the 60s and 70s, new struggles appeared. The workers' autonomy movement, wildcat strikes, neighborhood organizations that had at different times a very revolutionary character. Many of those movements tended to use a Marxist language, either because they were influenced by similar movements in Italy, or because, for example, Marxism could be studied in the universities under the fascist dictatorship, whereas anarchism was suppressed completely. But despite their Marxist language, these movements tended to have a very libertarian or anti-authoritarian character. But the CNT, they missed this completely. They made contact with these movements, they saw that they were using a Marxist language, and they just assumed that they were communist, and much too late rejected the idea of working with them. And then they continued to pick up on events that were hot topics in the 1920s and 1930s, but that people had long since forgotten about. So they really missed a chance to incide in any kind of powerful way in that social movement during the transition in the 70s. They also had taken on very conservative characteristics as an organization. So in the face of the inevitable police repression that was directed against anarchists, they took a defensive posture and a legalistic posture, asking to be left alone, claiming that they were innocent, and not pushing for a heightened struggle, but actually trying to preserve some kind of social peace. So they were really caught flat-footed by repression, and there's lots of criticisms against the CNT for how they participated or didn't participate in those movements during the transition. Subsequently, the CNT broke apart, as lots of the different unions that constituted the CNT wanted to adopt a more reformist structure so they could participate in the new democratically managed workplaces. Other parts of the CNT refused to do that, so the CNT split into multiple groups. Then they had a big court battle over who was still allowed to use the initials, CNT. And it was just this big internal ugly fight that made the CNT much less effective. It turned it away from struggles in the workplace. And also turned a lot of people off to it. In the 80s, we find two very important struggles. One of those is the COPEL, which is a coordinating body of prisoners in struggle. The conditions in Spanish prisons in the 80s, just like today, were and continue to be very terrible. In Spain, there were more prisoners under the democratic regime than there were under the fascist regime. And Spain is the country with the most prisoners in all of Europe. There are about 70,000 prisoners in Spain. In the 80s, due to the precarity in the prisons and the bad conditions, the prisoners got together and they organized a coordinating group. They had three basic points of their struggle, which were getting rid of the FIES, which was a special regimen inside the prison, like prison within prison. FIES is short for Ficheros Internos de Especial Seguimiento.
Y está,
and it's applied to political prisoners or conflictive prisoners. They were also fighting for the end of the dispersion of prisoners, in which prisoners are sent to the farthest prisons away possible, farthest away from their families. And they also fought for the release of prisoners with terminal illnesses, so that those prisoners could die in their homes and not in a cell. It was a struggle with lots of prison riots and mutinies, as well as hunger strikes. They didn't achieve any of their three main points of struggle, but they did manage to close down one prison in the north of Spain, where that was a particularly cruel prison with lots of torture used. It was a struggle that was very important within social movements and within the anarchist struggle, but we believe that it didn't really reach society at large. The majority of the people in Spain don't know what the FIES regime is, what this isolation regime is, and they don't know what happens inside the prisons. Another very important struggle in the 80s was the anti-militarist struggle, and which was against the obligatory military service. This was a struggle that was ultimately victorious, in that obligatory military service was abolished. So these struggles in the 80s ended up to a large extent as isolated single-issue struggles. So even though they achieved some successes, they didn't break out of this bubble that often grows up around single-issue struggles. So the anti-militarist struggle, for example, was able to get rid of the draft, but it failed to continue any sort of broader struggle against militarism in general. Then in the 90s, there was an important case, Caso Córdoba, in which four people were arrested after a bank robbery in Córdoba that resulted in the death of a cop. And these were anarchist bank robbers, most of them from Italy. And this was actually the vector by which insurrectionary anarchism in its most recent incarnation arrived in the Spanish state. So lots of anarchists in Barcelona and in Catalonia and elsewhere in the Spanish state really picked up on this act, and also the uncompromising statements of these four prisoners in defense of their expropriation and their armed action. They picked up on that as an inspiration, and that was actually one of the main influences that led to the appearance of this more recent form of insurrectionary anarchism, rather than, for example, texts by Bonanno or Cavalieri, which actually weren't translated until significantly later, and often contained a very different form of insurrectionary anarchism than that which was present in Spain. But the Caso Córdoba in 1996 also led to a pretty heavy split in the anarchist space.
A finales de los años 90 encontramos una escisión bastante importante dentro de la CNT.
A raíz in response to Caso Córdoba, the CNT makes a statement saying that the four prisoners of the case are murderers. And so in that moment, the anarchist Black Cross breaks off relations with the CNT. At the same time, libertarian youth, Las Juventudes Libertarias, put out a book called Sharpening Our Lives, which is largely influenced by Italian insurrectionary anarchism. In that book, they made criticisms of anarcho-syndicalism, they criticized wage labor, and so they ideologically break off from the CNT.
En el año 2000 se van sucediendo
in 2000 in Barcelona there is a wave of decentralized actions, sabotage and other actions in the street by a variety of different groups. And here there are two very important repressive cases.
En el año 2003 la Guardia Civil da un golpe.
In 2003 the police arrest an anarchist group in Barcelona. They accuse them of illegal association and forming a terrorist group. The members of the group are accused of carrying out sabotages and bombings of government buildings and other targets, actions against banks, and actions in solidarity with various prisoners.
personas
State seeks 120 years imprisonment to be accused.
Finalmente permanecen
Finally, they do about 5 or 6 years in prison.
Ellos están
and that group was largely influenced by Italian insurrectionism. And the idea of if not us, who? If not now, when?
Y bueno, es cuando hacen una serie de acciones y posteriormente son detenidos. Después encontramos
in 2009, there's another case of repression. The police detain a comrade, Tamara. She's accused of sending a mail bomb to the director of penitentiary services in Catalonia. In solidarity with the prisoner, Amadeo Casillas, who is carrying out a hunger strike at the moment. And he's on hunger strike to demand his release after over 20 years of imprisonment. So those are some of the most important repressive cases.
Before we actually get to these currents, excuse me, let's take a little break from the talk because it's pretty dense. Again, we're listening to conversation or presentation by Pablo and Ana from Barcelona, two comrades. Let's listen again to the actual song of by Paco Ibáñez called Agalapar from his presentation at the Olympia, I think in 1968 in Paris. It opens up with a little bit of talk that I'm going to skip through. Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org.
Comme ça, vous vous compromettez avec moi aussi. Vale, adiós. Las tierras, de España, las grandes, las solas, desiertas llanuras. Galopa caballo Cuatalbo, jinete del pueblo que la tierra es tuya. A galopar, hasta enterrarnos en el mar. A galopar, hasta enterrarnos en el mar. A corazón suenan, resuenan las tierras de España en la cerradura. Galopa caballo Cuatralbo, jinete del pueblo que la tierra es tuya. A galopar, hasta enterrarnos en el mar. A galopar, hasta enterrarnos en el mar. Nadie, nadie que enfrente no hay nadie, que es nadie la muerte si va en tu montura. Galopa caballo Cuatralbo, jinete del pueblo que la tierra es tuya. A galopar, hasta enterrarnos en el mar. A galopar, hasta enterrarnos en el mar.
So in this time period, the late 1990s and the next decade, one can talk as a generalization about three different currents within the anarchist space. And these currents were largely isolated. They existed in parallel to one another, often without communicating, generally rejecting one another, but without without entering into any serious or direct criticisms. You had the squatters, and the squatters largely failed to make a criticism of housing under capitalism. They ended up largely as a sort of self-isolating bubble. And it's interesting that in the last few years, or for example, say between 2005 and 2010, the part of the squatters movement that attempted most to actually address the problem of housing under capitalism took up a enormous discourse rather than any revolutionary or anarchist discourse. On the other hand, it's important to recognize that this current, along with all the others, did achieve some important things. So the squatters movement, for example, did succeed in opening up lots of free self-organized spaces for social centers and other projects throughout Barcelona. And they also helped the participants in that squatter movement regain lots of skills that have generally disappeared under capitalism. And these are skills that are extremely useful to put the concept of self-organization to practice. And so that squatters movement is still continuing, and there's anarchist participation in it, but it doesn't exist so much as a distinct current. Then you also have the current of the CNT, the anarcho-syndicalists, and there were, after the 80s, a couple of strikes of some importance, but in general, the CNT participated very little in any workplace struggles. They were very ineffective in workplace struggles, and since that was their primary motive, they can also be considered to have been a failure or to have been ineffective during these years. But they also accomplished something important. For many years, they were one of the primary forces in preserving or recovering a memory of past struggles in Barcelona. So just because they had organizational continuity, they served as a link to the past. And they also intentionally lots of activities, whether these are historical tours or the publication of books or holding talks and other events to retain these memories of struggles in the past. And those memories have been very important. They've served as a way to preserve and to spread collective experiences and collective knowledge. So they played an important role, even though they largely failed in their primary line of struggle. Then you also have the insurrectionary current, which did not succeed in generalizing attacks against the system. It didn't succeed in breaking out of specialized groups. However, they did keep strong attacks against the state alive, so that the idea of forceful illegal sabotages wouldn't just be a thing of the past, but would be ever present and visible as a reality in ongoing struggles. And that's very important, that they made sure that these strong attacks did not fade into the past, that they remained a present part of struggles, even if they did fail in some of their other their other aims.
Can you say a few things about what the difference in, or first, could you give a basic, like, just round out of what insurrectionalism is, and what differentiates the Italian schools of thought from the Spanish?
Insurrectionary anarchism has had lots of different incarnations in the history of the anarchist struggle in Barcelona. Perhaps within that history, the most basic element is the idea that you don't wait for conditions to be ripe, but you have to make conditions, that now is always the time to go on the attack and to increase the strength of the struggle, to spread possibilities for rising up against the state. So, for example, that was one group of anarchists in the 1920s during a definite low in the social struggles that went on the attack, that started carrying out armed actions, that started seizing weapons, learning how to use them. And the experience that they generated definitely played a role in the successes in 1936, when thousands of armed workers were able to defeat the military in the streets. And then it can also be seen in the 1990s, when lots of the CNT were much more legalistic. Lots of them had taken on a social democratic discourse, a discourse of rights and reformism. And then in that context, the libertarian youth, Juventudes Libertarias, broke off from the CNT, talked about abolishing work rather than just making work more humane. They talked about changing society down to its very foundations, rather than just changing the management structure. And they also talked about the need to go on the offensive now against the state. Insurrectionary anarchism in Spain, in the most recent incarnation, was largely influenced by Italian insurrectionism. I would say that it came directly from there. So it did not have the influences of Greek insurrectionary anarchism or the forms of insurrectionary anarchism that were developing on the west coast of North America or in Chile or in other places. However, because it came from the Cordoba bank robbers from their action and then from their statements, it actually ended up differing a lot from the sort of insurrectionary anarchism described by Bonanno or Cavalieri. And one of the main differences that often surprised people when they first read translated texts of those Italian writers who I mentioned weren't translated until several years after this, it surprised lots of people in Spain, the very large social emphasis that the Italian insurrectionary texts had, the emphasis on intervening and being present in social struggles, and also the lack of a total rejection of formal organization. So, of course, formal organization is critiqued in Italian insurrectionary thought, but it's not necessarily rejected, whereas insurrectionary anarchism in Spain tended very heavily towards small affinity groups and only informal organizations.
So we're going to take a break from the rest of that conversation. Next up is Ana, and she's going to be talking about anarcho-feminism in Spain. But we will bring that next week along with conversations about healthcare and involvement in reformist struggles. And I hope you've been enjoying the content. Again, the show can be found later on. Both parts eventually will be available through ashevillefm.org/thefinalstraw. And afterwards, podcastable through radio4all.net. But just by searching The Final Straw and Bursts. But so in the meantime, we're going to, for the rest of the show, listen to a little bit of metal, as is my way. We're going to hear Usnia, which is a Portland-based doom metal project. And off of their self-titled album, which I believe just came out this year or late last year, we're going to hear Chaos Kampf and probably a little bit of Alone with Our Failures by Woe off of their album A Spell for the Death of Man. Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. Thank you.
ashevillefreemedia@ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm your host, Bruce the Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF.net out of Santa Rosa, California also. This show is sponsored by the worker owners at Firestorm Books and Cafe, 48 Commerce Street in downtown Asheville, North Carolina. Firestorm features organic coffee and milks, vegan sandwiches, homemade baked goods, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found online at www.firestormcafe.com. So this concludes the first part of an interview show with two anarchists living in Barcelona about the history of anarchist resistance and organizing since the revolution of 1936 there, interspersed with Spanish music followed by metal. We heard Usnia off of their self-titled album with Chaos Kampf. After that, that was Woe with Alone With Our Failures off of the album A Spell for the Death of Man, available on Stronghold Records. And right now we're listening to Witch Mountain from Portland with Veil of the Forgotten. And I hope y'all have a wonderful week, and stay tuned next week, live Sunday between 2 and 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.ashevillefm.org for the second half of that interview and more music. Enjoy the music.